What's up, everyone? We're back this week with BDE. We're out last week because everyone was out on vacation.
I was spring breaking.
You're spring breaking. You were in Amsterdam.
So yeah, I did call it 5 days in London, 3 days in Amsterdam. Craziest thing, you know, you're here in America, right? And you're about to cross the street and you look to your left and then you don't see a car coming. So you step out in the street, right? Mm-hmm. Well, if you do that in England, you get run over because all those people drive on the wrong side of the road, right? So you got to learn to look right. So I finally kind of after a couple of days get back in the habit. Okay, look right and all that. Then I go to Amsterdam, bikes everywhere. That's all these people do is ride bikes around. So you step out in the street and they're like bikes coming from every direction. Yeah. And what's crazy about it is I'm sitting there going, you know, if bikes, like my form of transportation, I'm ride around, I'm going to have some swag, right? I'm going to have a cool ass looking bike pimped out. They're all piece of shit bikes.
I saw you post a picture on Twitter of all the bikes.
I'll send that to Jacob.
Yeah, Jacob will pull it up, but you were trashing the
You know
bikes.
Why? It's because your bikes get stolen.
Oh, they steal
so
them.
Yeah. And what happens is somebody steals them, they ride around, and then they throw them into the canal. And they dredge the canal about every 6 months and drag
Pick
out like 2,000 old piece of shit bikes. So that's what you do. But it was cool. I'd never been to Amsterdam.
You said it was fun. You said it was a good place. But yeah, it's like stuff like that. It's like, I don't know if I could ever live in Europe. Like you got to travel by bike and then you don't even get a nice bike because everyone steals it. It's like, dude, fuck this place.
Well, it was interesting. We took the train from instead of a plane from London to Amsterdam, and wind turbines, solar everywhere.
Really?
Driving through the countryside of France.
Yeah.
We went through Brussels and then up into Holland. And so the renewables thing's real.
Yeah. Solar in Europe is wild. Yeah. It's not the best place for solar. So it's interesting to see it though. It's funny, we're joking before we got on here because Mark and Saw and Kirk are not with us today. It's just me and you.
This is like old school.
You know, last week. Not last week, but the week before last was our 100th episode of BDE. That's kind of crazy.
That
like
is
to
crazy.
Think about it. It used to just be me and you.
I know.
In front of a green screen with a blimp.
I mean, yeah, we need the blimp back. Let's get the blimp picture.
We should order like a blimp to sit on the table just as a
kind of
as
float,
a relic.
We float back and forth.
I'd be down. But you know, every time we come in here without Mark, we're like, oh shit, man.
What are we gonna say?
Yeah, we're not gonna sound
makeup
smart.
Makeup statistics.
We don't have our numbers and stats guy. So it's funny. One of the last episodes that we didn't have Mark on, you and I, we stopped recording and Kirk. You're like, man, that show just really didn't have any substance to it. And then someone called us out on the YouTube comments. There's like too much fluff, not enough numbers. And I'm like, damn.
And then we got him back. We brought in Josh Young. Yeah. Like, yeah. We'll give you numbers. Yeah.
We'll
Josh knows his stuff.
Someone to give you numbers. So just want to preface this by apologizing that if Chuck and I don't deliver this week on numbers, I don't know, you may just have to find another
man,
show.
Man, I did numbers for like 20 some odd years running. I'm done with numbers.
I'm done with numbers.
Exactly.
But big week in Houston this week. Sarah Week is here. So lots of people in and out of Houston attending Sarah Week or talking at Sarah Week. But sounds like it's getting kicked off with a bang because Saudi Aramco CEO Amin Nasser had a quote. I saw this on the news this morning that we should abandon the fantasy of phasing out oil and gas and instead invest in them adequately reflecting realistic demand assumptions. So Saudi Aramco CEO comes out swinging at Sarah Week saying that we need to abandon this transition fantasy and invest more in oil and gas. Do you think he's saying that just because he's got a home field advantage
talking
here,
his own book
being here in Houston, you know, talking his own book, or what do you take on that?
Well, I mean, you think part of it too is, I mean, he runs Saudi Aramco. He is not MBS, right? So MBS talks the broader game of the transition, diversifying Saudi from just being oil and gas guys, where the Saudi Aramco guy gets to say, no, we're just oil and gas guys.
Yeah.
And you wonder if there's some political messaging in that as well. Because
that is interesting. I wonder, like, you think that they're on the same page for things. So
well,
you and I
say different stuff all the time.
That's true.
And part of it's by design sometimes.
That's what I'm saying. That's what, you know, you say one thing out of one entity and say one thing out of the other, play it politically.
So I did learn something. I did learn something from my London trip. You know, when Jared Kushner was in charge of the Middle East under Trump.
Yeah.
I mean, four agreements were signed between Arab nations and Israel during that period. And supposedly it was really close between Saudi and Israel signing an agreement. Do you know how MBS and Jared Kushner, I mean, a Jew, a Muslim, bonded?
How's that?
Call of Duty.
Call of Duty.
They, seriously, they supposedly sat there for hours playing Call of Duty.
Playing video games.
Just playing video games with each other.
It's funny. The Call of Duty, the online lobbies and chats have been known to bring together people from all different backgrounds and races and religions. And
yeah, no, I got this from a good source that literally would know. But that is supposedly they just sat there for hours and played.
That's pretty funny. You had that's actually parlays kind of well into our next story, because you said you had some dirt on this, but saw that Exxon CEO Darren Woods came out saying that they're not trying to buy Exxon. I guess there's been all this speculation.
Hess. Not trying to buy.
Sorry,
Hess.
Sorry. Trying to buy Hess. Been all this speculation that maybe they were trying to buy Hess and block this deal. Anyways, what happens is you've got this block in Guyana and you have different partners in it. You have Hess, Chevron, Exxon. And apparently Chevron and Hess disagree with Exxon's interpretation of the joint operating agreement, and Exxon is blocking this deal from happening. You said you had a little bit of knowledge on this.
I talked to an old school Exxon employee who's gone now, but has not seen the agreement, but was there when a lot of these things were written, knows the standard operating procedure. Said back in the 70s, and I forget the number, but just the standard joint operating agreement that would govern these big majors doing business with each other, did not have a pref right clause in it. But because of all the merger stuff that happened in the 70s, in the 80s, that joint operating agreement added a clause in there for pref rights. And so he said, I guarantee you Exxon did not sign the joint operating agreement, particularly since they're the ones that drafted it for Guyana, without the pref right language in there. Mm-hmm. So if Exxon says it's in there, guess what? It's in there.
Yeah.
Number one. And number two, his take on how the pref right agreement worked, he thinks 80-85% chance that Exxon's going to win this in arbitration. And he can't figure out what Chevron was doing by pushing this. And so,
yeah, you know, it's interesting. It says that this is Darren Woods' first public comments since they've been pursuing this arbitration case. And Woods said that Exxon would not have waited for Chevron to announce its deal with Hess if it wanted to buy Hess. So he's taken away the speculation that they're trying to block this acquisition. And then he said, we're basically standing up for what we believe is a fundamental right. So sounds like, you know, they, whether it's, you know, this pref rights and the joint operating agreement or whatever it is, it's basically dealing with the asset and the deal itself, but has the potential to block the Chevron.
And it's written as a risk factor in the S-4 for the Chevron Hess deal that, and Exxon disagree on the pref right.
Yeah.
So it's announced
it in that.
And I think, don't the Chinese own like 30% of that block too? So there's another party
in there
involved with it as well. And so I think what Exxon's contention is even in a merger, because the whole reason the pref right stuff is I misspoke this. Let me say this again. So in the 70s, there was a pref right, but it didn't deal with corporate mergers. And you had all the mergers happen in the 70s. So they rewrote the language, I think, in the 80s that included mergers. And what's supposed to happen is in a merger, you're supposed to say, well, Ghana was, this block was worth $20 billion or whatever it was. You have to assign a value to it.
Yeah.
And then the product right can be exercised in it, even in a corporate merger. So
got you.
Yeah. No, so this is gonna be get your popcorn out.
We'll see what the fallout is from that. You have it. How long do these things usually take to shake out? I mean, is this something that happens over the next 6 months, 12 months?
Well, I mean, I don't know what the arbitration clause says, you know, but
yeah,
like most of the time you don't want going, you know, you don't want to be going to court. So you make a pretty strong arbitration case.
Yeah.
Or arbitration clause so that you're dealing with this in front of an arbitrator.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, so that's all, I mean, pretty recent development. So we may be talking about this.
The other thing Wood said today is he came out swinging and said, hey, everybody wants clean energy. Nobody's willing to pay for it.
Yeah, no one wants to pay for it. Yeah, I thought that was a pretty baller comment.
Well, we've talked
about lots of comments from the major oil and gas CEOs.
Nothing like come to Houston.
Yeah. You just can't just everyone's say just coming to Houston want, yeah. saying whatever, say whatever you want down here.
Well, you know, because we've talked about it on here. I've always thought that because they have pricing power or they show a pricing mechanism that gas stations ought to have a pump. This is clean gasoline, pay X for it.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be more expensive than normal gasoline. Yeah. Give the consumers a choice.
Pay a premium for it.
Yeah.
I mean, airlines have been trying that with having you pay for your carbon credits. In the app, it's like, you want to pay an extra $100? And I don't think that's sitting very well, at least in the public discourse on Twitter. People think that it's kind of a grift. I'm not sure on the back end if airlines are actually doing that. And, you know, airlines probably spend less time worrying about that and credit card miles rewards programs and just figure out how to bolt their planes properly. Did you see that whistleblower for Boeing
was
found dead? And that 100% looks like a murder.
He totally said to a friend, I am not suicidal.
Yeah. He said, if something happens to me, I'm not suicidal. And so lots of weird shit going on there.
Hey, Colin, I'm here to announce that if I'm found dead, I am not suicidal. Go check out Maynard Hold at Veriten or any of my competitors that are coming after me. I'm not suicidal.
While we're on this track of CEO, oil and gas CEOs, Toby Rice was in the news after this midstream acquisition. He was on CNBC, and I saw he was catching some flack on Twitter for talking about their, I want to say their AI strategy, but, you know, the future of AI power demand. Did you get a chance to listen to that?
I did. I listened to our good friend Toby speak, and I did not until I heard him speak on this. I had not put this together, but basically what he's saying is, if we buy back in the pipelines, and you look at our cost structure, he said we're cash flow positive on a molecule below $2, and he said at that level of profitability. He said, we can do a lot less hedging. And he basically told investors, he said, look, natural gas demand is up 50% over, I think he said, the last 20 years, or maybe it was the last 10 years. But he said, storage is only up 10%. So that's what's made our commodity so much more volatile, because you can't store it to meet demand. And so you've kind of got to do it through the drill bit, right?
Yeah.
And he said, if I have really, really low break evens, cash flow positives, I can handle my debt out of cash flow at lower prices. He goes, I'm going to hedge a lot less. Therefore, the volatility, the upside, my shareholders are going to capture.
Interesting.
Which is really interesting, because, you know, early in my career, 30 years ago, when I joined, energy was your inflation hedge. Mm-hmm. You played it for commodity exposure, period.
Yeah.
And then Louis Dreyfus, the trading company, built an oil and gas company, and they came in and said, hey, we can turn this into manufacturing. We can go out and hedge and lock in rates of return. And you saw hedging slowly get adopted by the rest of the industry, and people started talking about, yeah, we protect the downside, we do all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
No. Toby's going back old school and saying, hey,
it's always been like, for me, it's like never been interested in investing in oil and gas companies, because there's so much just different agency risk with that. It's like, you know, these E&Ps have their own hedge books. And so it's like, if you want to just say, hey, I'm bullish on oil and gas and I want to invest in that sector. It wasn't as easy as buying a public oil and gas company because they had all of these different just variables that oil could be skyrocketing and your share price or your stock price of your bag that you're holding isn't going up in a linear fashion because maybe they were hedged. You know, so I think that that's actually more appealing. Like if I was a public E&P, if I'm a shareholder investor, I want more of that volatility and like direct commodity exposure.
Well, if you think about it, I mean, energy drives a lot of the economy. So if you own this diversified portfolio, you sit there and you own Amazon stock. Well, what's their biggest risk is gasoline prices go to $12 a gallon.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, to offset that risk, you need exposure to oil
energy.
Price,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure.
And same, electricity is becoming more and more natural gas based in terms of its correlation.
Yeah, if you're building out like a real balanced portfolio, it's like you'd want to own X amount of energy to account for rising
energy prices. Yeah, I mean, you could say the stock market run, you know, since 2010 was all the product of the shale revolution, both low natural gas prices and low oil prices.
Yeah, for sure. Should make a whole video on that about how it fueled the biggest boom of
so
the
even though
economy.
We sucked and didn't generate any returns, we used to pitch that your funds did well. I mean your whole pension fund did great.
You need to make these investments to fuel the rest of your portfolio. Yeah, that's some mental gymnastics there.
It's like, have you seen all this stuff on Twitter? You know, the real estate agents used to charge 6%.
Used to, they still do.
No. They settled out of court last week.
I know,
week.
But that happened last week.
Yeah.
You're talking like this is old news. It happened last week.
No, but I mean, have you seen the mental gymnastics by these real estate guys? Well, 6% actually made it better because it's like, dude, how did that make it better?
Dude, I've always you and I were just talking about this, about buying homes, and I've always looked at real estate agents and like, no knock on real, I'm sure there's real estate agents out there that are actually like valuable. But like talking about the whole, like the collective, I'm like, just talk about a know-nothing job where it's like, well, I found these listings, I printed them out for you, and you just facilitate, make sure some documents are signed. Someone on Twitter did retweet that news, that news article of the 6% being taken out, and it's like land bros everywhere looking at this and like had the sweating gif. So land bros are like, no, we are valuable in the minerals process.
Yeah. Well, and it already felt like that was in reality. I mean, I would go to my real estate agent and say, do it for 1% instead of 3.
Yeah.
You know, when I bought and sold my townhome.
Yeah.
And,
well,
and
most people don't do that. And then it's like, you know, you can do that on the buyer side, but the seller side, you know, they still have their split. And so I think that what happens is that you still have real estate agents, but it's just you're filtering out the cream of the crop, and they're negotiating what their rate is, and the best real estate agents are going to get the best commissions. It's not just going to be a 6% flat fee across the board. So you're still going to get paid, but you actually have to work to get paid. So
I wonder if it's going to be like geologists in Midland during downturns. You know, you drive through Chick-fil-A and there's your former real estate agent.
Yeah. I don't know, it's just interesting with like platforms. Like, I mean, how long has these online platforms, whether it's HAR or Zillow, Redfin, like they've been around forever. And it's like, you can never ask for more information about listings, and like you can sit there from your computer and get all the information that you need. You know, Zillow, I'm sure had a case back in the day. It's like, oh, we're going to replace all real estate agents. And
yeah, I'm sure there was
20 years later. Yeah. 20 years later, still here. So.
Well, the way I take it is, there was a buddy of mine that I went to undergrad with, and back in the periodically, these bonds would show up where a company would issue debt, and they'd issue it at about 50 basis points cheaper than they should have. So if they should have had 7% interest rates, they'd get 6.5, because it would have a feature that if you co-owned the bonds and one of the person dies, they would just pay it out at par. And so the reason these bonds were cheaper is you'd go sell it to old folks. And the pitch was, hey, husband and wife in your 70s, if one of y'all dies, you can then get the bonds to pay out at par, and that way you can pay for the funeral and stuff. So it was kind of this retail product. So anyway, he picked up on this and he started buying it with terminally ill patients. And so he'd go find a bond that was trading at, you know, 85 cents on the dollar, buy it with a terminal patient. They'd die in 3 to 6 months and he'd get paid out 100 cents on the dollar. And he was doing all this. And he raised a little fund, and it was making like 20% rate of return payouts each year. The SEC finally steps in and says, no, you can't do that. He went to court with them. He wound up ultimately winning, but at the end of the day, he just couldn't afford to fight it anymore. Yeah. And he was calling and telling me about how outrageous it was and all this. I said, dude, you had a good run.
Yeah.
It's kind of like I say that to the real estate agents.
Yeah.
You had a good run.
You had a good run. You know what I thought was funny, going back to Toby talking on CNBC, is literally the week before we had recorded a podcast. And remember on that podcast, yeah, I was like, if I was Toby Rice, this is what I'd be doing. We're talking about how they curtailed a billion cubic feet of gas. And we're talking about how they should have their own gas turbines and sell electricity to data centers and miners. And then a week later, they announce this acquisition, and Toby's on CNBC talking about power demand for AI and GPUs. And I was like, I convinced Toby listened to our podcast and took that.
How many times have we talked about Meta and them putting John Arnold on the board?
Yeah, and then Toby needs to throw out some kudos to the Digital Wildcatters while he's on CNBC. But speaking of
that was incredibly arrogant of us. I like that. Toby Rice is sitting there vaping right now. Who are these two numbnuts sitting there talking about me down in Houston?
But speaking of data centers and miners, had some M&A activity in the Bitcoin mining space. So Marathon Digital is buying a Bitcoin mining facility that's owned by Applied Digital for $87 million in cold hard cash. The Bitcoin mining centers, co-located with a wind farm, has a capacity of 200 megawatts. I'm trying to see where this is based at, but so Marathon Digital, who will be at Empower next week. They've been at Empower every year. So if you don't have an Empower ticket, come to Empower. But yeah, interesting to see some more consolidation. We just saw Amazon buy that data center that was co-located with that nuclear facility. We talked about it on that podcast last week. So starting to see some of these centers get bought up.
I guess the economies of scale it's cheaper to probably operate more computers on a per computer basis than less. And then you do have some capacity to negotiate your energy contract.
Yeah. And I also think it's kind of like, you know, kind of think about like the oil and gas shale days where, you know, there's a lot of upfront work that goes into securing a lease and, you know, proving out the asset. And so it's probably easier for someone like Marathon Digital to go in and say, hey, Applied Digital already did all of this work, you know, getting the facility stood up, getting the power purchase agreements with the wind farm, and they can go in there and acquire it. And yeah, I don't know what these companies look for when they're acquiring, but yeah, I'm sure that there's some economies of scale there.
Yeah,
in terms of maintenance and
OpEx. And there's probably best practices if you built a facility of some sort. Somebody that's been operating longer and does it more probably has better ability to cool.
Marathon Digital probably has better purchasing power with suppliers and things of that nature. So yeah, it makes sense. But interesting to see that. And then, man, the only thing that I have left today is Don Jr. wanted us to talk about this because it's pretty important. It's not energy related, but it is important. So
I will do my best.
Don Jr. He posts on Twitter. He said, has anyone else noticed that Twitter search functions changed and objectively sucks now? And I replied, I said, it's like been like this for a year, pretty much ever since Elon took over. It's like terrible. You can't find any posts or people that you want.
And Don, that's the hard thing, tagging people.
That's what I'm about to get to here, because Don said, I've really noticed it lately. I'll try to search someone based on their name, and it's virtually impossible if you don't have their exact handle. Honestly, search functionality has declined more than Google, and y'all should bring this aspect up on BDE. That's what I'm talking about, because Don wanted us to talk about it on BDE. But yeah, like when I'm typing up a post and I go to tag people, sometimes I'm having to back out of the post and go look up their handle. And then like either write down their handle.
And I Google search. Yeah, I Google search their Twitter handle. That's how you know it's bad.
Like LinkedIn's always had that problem. Like you could go to Google and find what you want on LinkedIn on Google better than you could on the LinkedIn platform. And this is actually, for those of you that are on our Collide app or getting ready to get on Collide as we launch the new app next month, this was part of the thesis, was that it's always been so hard to find things through search. And so like you'd see this good post on Twitter, like from a production engineer, like, hey, why do I have iron carbonate build up in my saltwater disposal well? And then, you know, engineers would come in and answer, and it's like really technical, valuable information. And then 2 days later, it's lost into the ether. And so ultimately what we want to do is be able to index that information using AI. That way, the next time someone has that question, boom, you can ask AI and it'll pull up someone's post that was talking about that. But search isn't a trivial thing. Like search is really hard. And, that's what, you know, these horizontal platforms, there's just so much content and information that, you know, even if you had good search, like when Twitter search was good, you still had to go in advanced search and you had to remember someone's handle, exactly the words that were used in the post and things
about
of that nature.
What date too.
Yeah. I mean, but yeah, ever since Elon's taken over Twitter, and I don't want to bash on Elon because I love the mission of what he has with X, but search is almost unusable at this point.
Was that by design? Do you think Elon did that on purpose?
No, I don't. I think that it's a byproduct.
Feverishly writing code every day.
I think it's a byproduct of, I mean, they just cut their engineering resources dramatically. I mean, you remember a lot of people were like, oh my gosh, they're cutting all these engineers. Like people didn't even think X was going to stay like running, right? And it stayed running. You know, it works really well, but just like it's a byproduct of maybe no one's putting any time and attention into search, and it's degrading and falling, and you know they're busy with a million other things. But I think like search is like a core feature of a platform, because especially like something as simple as looking up people's handles and names, like you need to be able to do that. And yeah, it's almost unusable from that perspective. So
I mean, I'm going to use this in quotes instead of the actual definition, but the AI of the search has always been bad too. It's like, I'll type in frack. Well, you and I interact all the time. You should be number one popping up on my Twitter search. Yeah. And a lot of times you're like way at the end.
That's what LinkedIn really sucks with that too, because it's like, actually, this is a broader conversation, because you know who really sucks at search now is Apple in my phone.
Oh, it's like, the worst.
Like it... In messages, like I'll go into messages and I'll type in, you know, Chuck, and like it works for you because you're the only Chuck on my phone, funny enough. But like if I was to do someone else like Jake, like I talk to Jake all the time.
Right.
And I search Jake and it doesn't bring up Jake in my top results or my contacts. It'll bring up like some Jake I haven't talked to in years. And Apple did not used to be like that. Like I could search through all my messages and find whatever I found. And so this isn't just a Twitter thing. This is kind of like broad spectrum of search just degrading and sucks on these apps. And so that's something that we're going to put a lot of time and attention to on Collide, because being able to find information quickly is important. And so being able to use AI to do that too kind of augments it. But yeah, it's like, it's not just like searching for things, you know, specific search, but like contextual things of like, oh, Colin and Chuck talk a lot. So he's probably looking for Chuck and not Chuck that he talked to 5 years ago.
Right.
So,
you know, it's interesting. I read a Wall Street Journal article, gosh, 15 years ago, and I wish I had saved it. But one of the things it talked about was that when you lose a significant relationship, like you go through a divorce or you and your best friend get in a fight and don't talk anymore, they talk about how you feel like you've lost a piece of yourself.
Yeah.
Well, you actually have, because the knowledge I have in this world is not just the stuff in my head. It's part of your network. And I kind of thought that was bullshit when I read it. But then literally that day, I walked into Mike Hines's office 3 times. He's my old business partner at Kane. hey, who was that dude we had dinner with in Dallas? Oh, yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
You don't realize how often you're actually accessing your memory bank, too. We do it all the time around here.
They call it in tech, they're called relational databases.
Yeah.
And so it's literally what it is. And it's like...
And it's search.
It's like, you know how many times I go ask Jake? I'm like, hey, who was that? Who's that person that, you know, was at that event? And like Jake has that information indexed, but I don't. And I know Jake has it indexed.
So I forget it. Yeah. No, but I mean, that's search right there.
No,
so it's just so important to our lives.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good point when you talk about it on like a very like analog or biological basis. Like humans are databases and we index information. And yeah, you have your little close network that other people have information index that you tap into. So it's interesting to hear about that. And that's actually like kind of what leads into like AI overtaking humanity in the future, is that they can just compute those things much faster than we can. So anyways,
one last thing real quick. So each week we've been talking about an election. Obviously, what do we need to talk about the Russian election for? Surprise, surprise, Putin won.
Yeah.
You know, there was some talk about him using his vote total to kind of justify Ukraine. He won 85% of the vote. Now, he killed off the number one opponent, arguably. And so
the AP Associated Press headline is Putin extends rule in preordained Russian election that harshest crackdown since Soviet era. But it says right here, Russian election, Putin declared winner of race that was never in doubt.
Yeah, exactly. But also, there was another election. It was for parliament in Portugal. And here's what I kind of found interesting about this. So in 2022, the Socialist Party had an outright majority, 120 of the 230 seats. Their prime minister was Antonio Costa. He'd been prime minister since 2015. So he was rolling into his third term here. Scandals aplenty. So 11 secretaries of states resigned, 2 ministers resigned. There's a big scandal with the airline. Costa, actually got accused of rigging contracts for lithium and hydrogen businesses. Oh, really? So we've got our energy tie. Yeah. And supposedly they went into his house and like found money in his bookshelf in between pages of books, and it was like $100,000 or something. But what was interesting, so through all this brouhaha, they called for new elections, and the outcomes were this. Actually, the center-right party, the Democratic Alliance, won 79 seats. Socialist Party won 77 seats. And the Chega Party, which is a far-right populist-type party that literally started five years ago, kind of out of nowhere, wins 48 seats of this. And so the reason I bring this election up is just some themes that are coming out of it. You know, these far-right populist-type candidates like in Argentina, et cetera, Trump. This may not just be a U.S. Trump thing. It feels like anti-government. And I know liberals say it's an authoritarian-type draw. It's not really that. It seems to be an anti, you know, kind of drain the swamp type thing. Mm-hmm. So it's happening everywhere. And Portugal had actually had a pretty good run. I mean, the Socialist Party had reduced the debt. Unemployment was less than 7%. They'd had economic growth. Inflation was under control there. Mm-hmm. Pretty good run.
Yeah.
So kind of the anti-government stuff establishing a hold in Portugal. And then the other thing that is kind of a pet peeve of mine, but it's something we've seen on all these elections, just the amount of corruption that goes on in all these governments. And the reason I bring that up is one of the things we've noticed on all of these is the government, the powers of the government are being used to investigate the corruption. And the one thing our founding fathers did is they said in the Constitution, if we have corruption, we're going to handle it in a political process. So you actually impeach the president. That's the House of Representatives, who are democratically elected. And then the Senate tries it. And that's the way we deal with corruption, as opposed to using the force of the state, if you will. I just bring that up because every one of these is highlighting just corruption, and it's,
and I also think
the prime ministers run from jail.
I also think how much of this is a byproduct of the internet and access to information. Like, you bring up this kind of mentality of like anti-government. Well, you know, these people in these countries are getting access to content from the United States, and, you know, how much does the United States influence the rest of the world in kind of our freedom and liberty? And I've always had this thesis about the internet for the last few decades that over time, war trends down, which it was and still is. But obviously, you know, we've had some volatility here in the last couple of years. And you also see things like, you know, shifting in religious beliefs and political beliefs. And what's happening is more people around the world are getting connected to each other and being exposed to new ideas and new ways of thinking. And, you know, I think this also kind of plays into the TikTok ban that just happened this week. Like, I'm really surprised, like, seeing some of my friends on Twitter that are very pro-American and liberty types of people all of a sudden bootlicking on the government banning TikTok. Like, I get it. Like, you know, there's concern around it being spyware for China. I don't think that that's like actually a viable complaint, but, you know, putting that aside, everyone's like, oh, well, China bans, you know, these American apps, Google, Facebook. It's like, cool, you want to beat China? It's like, is that what we're aiming for? Is blocking access to the internet and information and ideas? I use TikTok a lot, and my kids use TikTok. My daughter came up to me, my 10-year-old daughter came up to me and was like, hey, look at this video about extracting oil from this type of wood, from this bark. I had no idea that was even a thing. And this guy's out in the wilderness showing how you can extract hydrocarbons from this wood. Like, there's a ton of interesting and engineering type content on there. And to be honest, there's a lot of base content on there too that the overlords at the United States federal level wouldn't allow to be on Twitter and Facebook. And so I think it's a little bit concerning, this path that we're going down of passing these Patriot Act level types of bills to shut down internet platforms and not allow Americans to access parts of the internet and information. And I think that access to information is what is driving some of these things around the world, is just exposure to new ideas and beliefs. And, you know, I've always seen this. Like, I used to have a worker in Beijing in China that would come over here and help me with jobs in the Western Hemisphere. And we talk about these things. He's like, the issues are never with people. It's always governments versus totally. Governments. And I think that the internet is a very important development in the timeline of human history to allow us to understand each other better and be inspired by ideas and information. So always wonder how much of that plays into some of these political shifts that you see in some of these countries.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's no doubt that the Cold War, I mean, we sat there with nukes pointed at the Soviet Union forever. The Cold War was won by MTV, Levi's, and Coca-Cola. When they finally, when basically the Soviet Union figured out we had all that stuff, the people did there, it was the pressure on the government to actually liberalize.
It's cultural. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Very, very much so.
Well, we made a show out of Chuck and I came into this. I didn't know if we were going to have
a show.
This
was like old school.
But we performed. We did it.
So now we'll just get raked over the coals on all the comments.
If you have any negative comments, send them directly to Mark and Saul. But hope you all enjoyed the show this week. Couple of pieces of news. We do have our Empower event next week, March 26th, 27th, I believe are the exact dates. Would love to see if you're in energy. Would love to have you there. If you're a listener of BDE and you want to go, hit me up and I will give you a discount for being a BDE listener. Want way more energy folks there learning about the future of infrastructure and high performance computing. And then following that, we are launching our new version of Collide, and that's coming out at the beginning of April. Super excited about that. We're already bringing on new jobs into the Collide Jobs platform. So if you're looking for your next gig, we have jobs from Diamondback Energy, Vertice Oil Tools, Nine Energy. Go out and check that out. Going to be making a lot of progress and updates on Collide over the next few weeks. So hope to have you all on that platform.
So here's what I'll say to BD listeners. If you're going to go apply for your next job and you reach out and you convince me that you actually listen to BD, happy to coach you on it.
Dang.
So long as we can record it and potentially use it in support of Collide jobs.
All right. We will catch y'all next week.